My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools and tips how to live life full of meaning, passion and purpose.
Hello and welcome to Life, Passion and Business podcast episode 40. My name is Lisa Avery, and today I have the distinct honor of turning the tables on our usual host, Paul Harvey. Paul Harvey, good morning. Great to see you here.
Good morning. Thank you very much for this. I'm not quite sure how I feel about this, actually, but there we are. I surrender. I surrender. I take over. You have full permission to tell me to shut up.
Right. I'm looking forward to diving in. I mean, I guess the first question that occurs to me is, how does it feel to have reached the 40th episode on this project in a world where podcasts come and go, sometimes after episode 10? You've gotten to episode 40. How is that feeling?
It does feel pretty good, actually. I guess out of anything in terms of that, you know, there's very rarely I've done anything with that level of commitment and consistency. And it's only in the last few years that I've realized that, well, in the last 18 months, I guess, have I realized the importance of sticking to something.
Wow. That's powerful, sticking to something. Tell us, before we really unpack that, tell us a little bit about what got you onto this podcast, because I know there's some deeper existential quest that underpins there.
Well, there's you and your big words, existential. God damn it. I said there was nothing existential about it.
There was. I know the story. Come on.
Well, all right, it's a story, but I wouldn't have called it, I wouldn't have called it existential. It certainly wasn't anything I knew that had the X word in it. Okay, so the story is, and most of my listeners probably know this, is that I'm living in the northeast of Scotland. It's a very quiet, rural location. And it's not that rural, but it's a nice enough location. But it's quite a quiet place. And I had allowed my life to get smaller. Mm. And part of that was that I had focused, and I'm still focused. I moved here to focus on family life. I have one son, and that was always ever going to be. And I put my attention to, I was a stay-at-home father, effectively. For the last 16 years. So I came here to do that. And I allowed my life to shrink, which I think is something a lot of mothers do around their children. And I guess I've done the same sort of thing. I maintained my career to some extent, and that's what kept us going. That was fine. But it was the real focus of the kind of part of it was when my father died. My father died in February 2017. And he had been very healthy up until the last few years. A bit of knee trouble and a bit of this and a bit of that. But he had allowed his life to kind of ebb away because he had nothing other than breakfast, TV, lunch, more TV, food, more TV. And that's kind of his life. But that was all he wanted.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so he was 89 and he was definitely ready to go. He said to me, oh, I've had enough of this, mate. I've had enough of this. You know, so, but I watched him do that and I recognized similar symptoms in myself. And it may be a personality trait. You know, I look like my father. My hands like my father. I can look at my father's hands and my hands and see my dad's. It's very, very surreal.
Wow, that's powerful. Yeah. You know,
so yes, it's quite surreal. So yes, I guess that was the thing for the podcast. I kind of go, well, hang on a minute. What the bloody hell was it about? Why did we do this? Mm. And you see that we'll do some really strange things. Sorry, we've got the video on today so that Lisa can wave at me and tell me to shut up.
So I was just going to say there, Paul, how is your life getting bigger? How's your life expanding because of the podcast?
I guess there are two forms of expansion. Mm. I think there's the expansion that you allow yourself to have, which is the expansion of the head.
Mm.
And I think that is where, when you allow yourself to get bigger, and I'm allowing myself to get bigger, my head get bigger, but my capacity to see the potential for something bigger.
Mm.
So I own, is the podcast bigger? Well, the podcast has opened some doors for me, but I'll go to that in a minute. I think there's two sides to this. There's this sense mm-hmm. of like, our greatest limitation is our thinking, how we limit ourselves. And that's where I have been for the last XX years. I would never consider I have the capacity to do these things.
Mm.
And now I've got this podcast, which has grown to 40 episodes, and I'm approaching different people and they're saying, yeah, I like coming on your show. You know, and some of these people are, some are very successful. Some are not. Some are just, you know, ordinary Joe Soaps.
Yes. Yeah.
But, you know, some people, you know, I've got quite a few very successful business people that said, yeah, I'd love to come and chat with you.
Mm.
So, yeah, those are the doors. It's, that's what's changed. But I think what has changed, what it has given me is this real sense that we can grow and expand to help wherever we want to. And we are the only limitation of that expansion.
Mm, that is very powerful. And it seems like now you're speaking from a position of somewhat empowerment. I'm just wondering to you, for you, what empowerment looks and feels like and how that plays out in your life.
I wanted to let that sit for a moment about that, because I've talked about empowerment for years and being empowered or helping people be empowered. Because I when I moved here, I became a coach. So I've done a little bit of coaching in that area.
Mm.
I don't know. Can you ask the question again? Because I think it needs to sit with me. Can it say it again for me?
Yeah. What does empowerment mean to you?
Yeah, I it doesn't sit well. And I guess because there's two senses of empowerment for me. There's the kind of which is back to that internal model again. I mean, it's standing in my power means about having the confidence to just be there and express that and basically not be intimidated by anything around you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I have to say, I have been intimidated by lots of things around me over the last 50 years of my life.
Mm-hmm. And I think many people listening could very much relate to that. So I'm just wondering how you have arrived to this position of not feeling intimidated when approaching some of these big names, when not feeling intimidated about embarking upon
Now that's easy. That's really easy. Because a podcast is incredibly disarming.
Mm.
Okay, so if I approached any of these big names, I mean, Russell Dowd-Leash for one of them, he's one of the top 100 entrepreneurs and financiers in the country.
Well,
in Scotland, certainly, but he's an investor in a bit. So people want to get to talk to Russell to get money out of him.
Yes.
They're there to kind of get him to invest in their business, their idea, or put his support behind it.
Mm.
I went to him and said, Russell, can you tell me your story? I've got a podcast. I want nothing out of him other than just a chat.
And that is very disarming, as you say. No agenda.
I mean, if you don't want to talk to me, it's fine. But if you want to talk to me, I'd love to hear the conversation. So, you know, because it's so disarming, you're just going to someone and say, let's just have a chat and see what happens.
I love that concept, Paul.
And I love Jeff Birch was funny because I Jeff Birch I've known for many, many years, and he was quite a successful businessman and all sort of. And I phoned him up and I contacted him and he phoned me up. Literally, the phone went as soon as I went, hello. He says, hello, what mischief can we get up to then?
I love that.
It was 10 minutes of total kind of like, my God, how am I going to contain this guy into a podcast? I'll be in fits. I was laughing a lot, but you know, you know, yeah. I mean, it's been great to have those conversations. And there's been some people that have just been very quiet.
Mm.
Anyway, look, I'm rambling.
That's all right, Paul. We can use a little bit of your rambling from time to time. I have a question, speaking about disarming people. What disarms you in life?
Oh, God. If you ask my wife, she'll say, "We damsel was in distress."
Well, I mean, it's interesting.
That would be you. You are the you. It's you, Lisa. People like you.
Thanks, Paul. Meaning that I desperately need to be rescued.
No. But it's like you kind of say things to me. And it's like, okay, yeah. How could I? Anne Clark was another one. Yeah. So she kind of disarmed me. Women disarm you, I guess.
Oh wow. And I think you know, a guy like you, Paul, you have a massive amount of empathy. You connect very well. You know, whilst being a man, you have this real sensitive side, and I think that's probably why you've been drawn to work with women, and that's why you're thriving in this area. This sense of empathy you have, has that always been the way? Have you had to turn it up and or down in life, or is this the way you've already
always had it? I've always had that sense of empathy. Even in my school years, people would tell me stuff they shouldn't have done, you know. It's like, you know, and I wasn't always as diplomatic as I could be in those years, but I, you know, it's just or selective in who I told what. But hey, you know, that was then, you know. And when I came to Scotland, I moved up here for several reasons. One of them is it was a nice area. I came here because there is an organization here called the Finhorn Foundation. Mm-hmm. And they are a spiritual organization, and they're also an alternative kind of community for living. And we were fascinated by that energy. And we came to stay there for a while. You can do programs there. And that's how we discovered this area. Mm. And we looked at the idea of actually moving into that community for a while. And then my wife fell pregnant. So you can't be in that community in that situation. So that was it. We drew a line under it. And then, you know, we thought of, you know, we went off and got off and had families and things. Mm. But at some stage, what happened, Grandma moved up here because she was quite interested in the foundation. So we came as a visit and ended up buying a house in this direction.
Wow.
But,
you know,
it's being around this area here. I'm sorry, I've gone off the question. Just remind me what you asked.
About empathy. Have you always
empathy? Okay, yeah. So when I came up here, this is the very empathetic area, because everyone's, you know, around the foundation, everyone's doing feelings and doing life and doing like how can you do well with it. So it was very attractive to me to be around this area. Yeah. And I discovered coaching. So I did a coaching course because one of the guys who was going. And it was like, I'm doing these coaching models and I go, I do that anyway. That's what I do with the cashier in Tesco's.
Intuitively, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So it's like I go to Tesco's and someone's looking miserable, and I'll turn them around.
Yeah, that's powerful, isn't it? That's powerful. I know that you're very perceptive. You read people's moods very, very easily. Another thing about you, Paul, is how incredibly open-minded you are. And I think that's a remarkable quality, because often as people get older, well, sometimes as people get older, they become more sure of their views, a little bit more narrow-minded. But you have this wonderful curiosity and open-mindedness. I was just wondering, at what moment in your life has being open-minded most served you, or being of the most benefit?
I don't know. I've always been open-minded. It's never really been an issue.
Any particular moments when being very open-minded has worked out particularly well?
It's a question I don't even consider that I don't know how to answer it, Lisa, really. I mean...
What about the faith you had? You told me once about the story about moving house, moving countries without actually having seen the house.
Oh, this? Well, okay. All right. Open-minded. I wouldn't have called that open-minded. I'd just call that trust, really. So the story of coming here to Scotland. When my son was born, we lived in London. I had a lovely house in London. It was a nice part in a place called Enfield. It was a lovely area. I mean, London is such a massive place. Enfield had 250,000 people living in it.
Wow.
It's one little area in London. And there was loads of facilities. It was a perfect place to actually bring up children and have a family. And you know, son was born. My wife and I were late to parenting. We were both in our 40th year. And looking out the window, we backed onto a park in our house, and I could see kids pulling up trees. And you know, it was a realization that he would either be with those kids or fighting them. And it was like, this is not the place to bring up a child. We need to leave them. So we started looking out into the West Country, and I love the West Country. I love places like Bishop's Castle, all those of them. We used to holiday around the borders of Wales. I love that part of the world. But we came to visit Grandma in Scotland, because Grandma had now moved up here, and the little town called Forres, which is now where I live as it goes.
Wow.
And we were, I went out, Grandma's in a gay relationship, and I'm Susie and I are quite good mates. And we went out to the pub while Christine and my mother-in-law and now mother-in-law and my wife were chatting. Susie and I went to the pub, and we're chatting in the pub. And she said, "What are you guys going to do? Because you said you want to go somewhere." And I said, "Oh, we're looking for a B&B or something in the West Country or something like that." Because, "Oh, there's one for sale next door in this pub, next door to this pub."
What? Wow.
Right. So, you know, we were on holiday, life changed. You know, we started looking at the potential of buying this B&B next door to this pub.
Incredible.
Yeah, and the house prices were just starting to rise up here at that time. So we didn't get it. The price had gone up beyond where we were prepared to pay. But we drew a line under it, but it got our house on the market. It forced us to move. So not forced us to move, but it forced us to focus on the potential of moving. So the house was on the market and we went home. We literally put the house on the market while we were in Scotland. That's what we did.
Wow.
And then we went home, and then we proceeded to kind of make the house more sellable. And then about 3 months later, which is in the November, I went to China for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And my wife came back to Scotland to be with her mum. And I am literally at the airport getting on a plane, and my wife says to me, my wife phones and says, "I've seen a house. Can I go and look at it?"
Oh my goodness.
And I said, "Yes, you can, as long as you take someone who's not your mother." But I anticipated them going round placing furniture in this. Anyway, so they went round the house, and it was a good property apparently, and you know, the net result was I was in China for 3 weeks, and while I'm there in the mornings, I am phoning the wife to see what happened in the day, because we're at opposite ends of the day. They're 13 hours apart, yeah. I think it is.
Yes.
So while I'm getting up and going out to my first meeting, Cheryl's telling me what she'd done throughout the day. And then when I'm going to bed at night, we're getting up in the morning and planning the next bit. So I was going into meetings in China and doing negotiations in the full knowledge that I would have no part of it.
Oh my goodness. So Paul, I mean, this is a perfect example of you having a lot of faith. Tell me how having faith has helped you in life generally.
I have a sense that there is something greater than the sum of what we are. I mean, you can, some people would call it law of attraction. And I think there's this kind of like, it's a bit woo-woo. Something in this law of attraction. I think you do get what you tend to think about. Life tends to fall well when you move towards it with a positive intention. I think that to some extent you can create the negative side of stuff, and it's a fine line to how I describe this, really. I just happen to know that it seems to work when you set a clear intention for something. Now, one thing that was always missing in the books, The Secret and all those Law of Attraction things, was, you know, what they all got you to do was create your mood board and sit by and meditate by it, which was fantastic. But there needs to be an action content. You need to actually throw yourself in the direction you want to go.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
And that's why, you know, the house thing worked. We threw ourselves in that direction. We committed to get into that house, and it was the commitment, the process of commitment. I mean, it's that famous, isn't there? That Begin It Now quote, isn't it, from that Scottish guy who says, you know, when you commit fully to something, you open the door to all sorts of possibility.
Yeah, there's a real power to
Well, there commit. Is a power, because at the end of the day, I know it can be a bit woo-woo, but it when you kind of go, this is what my direction is, and you turn up something and you get to meet more people.
The
action of meeting more people, someone's going to say to you, "Oh, I can help you with that."
Absolutely. The statistical probability increases exponentially.
Yeah, absolutely. If you sit down and I want this, staring at it. Someone phoning you up and offering you, is that a bit limited? Anyway, yeah.
But there's been loads
of opportunities like that. I mean,
yeah.
My son is the greatest manifester I have ever known.
I know. This is quite a story, isn't it?
So he was 3 years old, and he was going to a little playgroup in the town hall, and you know, I took him in there every day. Anyway, they take them out to the toilet at some stage, and there was these old ladies doing this like kind of prize thing, raising money basically. They had tickets on all the little gifts and things, and you basically put your pound in and took a ticket out. Mm-hmm. And Keelan saw this kind of little thing of otters, and he wanted it. And the lady said, "Oh no, darling, you got to win it, love. You can't just take it." And the playgroup leader, there was about 15 kids in there, and she said, "Oh, we got some funds. Let's put some funds into this. Let's give everybody a ticket." So they paid £15 out of their charity fund to go to the charity. Mm-hmm. And Keelan put his hand in the bag and he pulled out the winning ticket for the otters.
Oh my goodness, that's an amazing story. I bet it was a euphoric moment.
I don't think they quite knew what to make of it, really. He was just like, yeah, okay, my otters is what I'm supposed to do.
Wow, that is the ultimate manifestation. That's amazing. Paul. So that, you know, this podcast is named Life, Passion, Business, the Life, Passion and Business podcast. Tell me how you have reconciled the three in your life.
Well, the paid, I don't know whether I have totally. I think it's still work in progress.
Hmm.
My sense of it, the reason it came up with this name was the fact I wanted to understand how people lived their life.
Mm.
Express their passion and brought that into their business. That was kind of that's where the thing came from. It's like, well, how do you do this? You know, and I was looking at successful. Well, all right, here's the thing. What looks like success on the outside may not necessarily be success on the inside. You don't know what happens behind closed doors.
Mm.
The most successful the most successful people kill themselves. You know, there's no, you don't actually know what's going on in someone's head.
Mm. No, you absolutely do not.
No. So that was why I wanted to have these conversations, because I wanted to understand what people's thoughts were around how they brought it all together.
Mm.
It's still work in progress for me. What I noticed over the last 18 months is the more I focus on myself, the more I focus on being the best I can be, the more opportunities open to me.
Yeah.
And I now I've created a morning routine, and I've always had a sort of morning routine, mm-hmm. which was somewhere along, oh God, it's morning. and that doesn't happen anymore. It's like, wow, it's morning. That's the difference. That's the difference now. And I just, I mean, the summer's easier. I must admit, when the sun is shining, I can roll out of bed without any effort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we've got it's a little bit darker when I'm getting up at the moment, and I'm still rolling out of bed pretty quick.
That's great.
But
that's,
you know, great. I mean, my commitment in the last, I started the morning pages last week. I committed to do morning pages, and I've done them 3 days running.
Would you like to tell your listeners what morning pages are for those who aren't quite so sure?
It comes from the book called The Artist's Way, and I cannot remember the lady's name, but it's all about expression of creativity and getting away the blocks that you have in your life around creativity.
Right.
And one of the biggest blocks of creativity is the critic, the monster, the thing that lives on your shoulder and goes, "You're not good enough. That's all that's a load of crap. That's a load of bullshit." You know, it's that thing that inner voice that kind of screws you over, basically. And the thing about morning pages is you cannot do them wrong, but the only thing you have to do is you have to commit to doing them.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you're writing on this page and going, "I do not like writing these morning pages," and it's illegible. Like, it doesn't need to be written. You don't need to really have to read it.
Right.
What you have to do is your hand has to move across the page and doesn't stop for three pages.
That's powerful, isn't it? Very powerful.
And this morning I got up, I thought, I want to run this morning, but it was 8 o'clock, and I go, I need to do morning pages. I committed to do them for 7 days solidly. So
brilliant.
That's what I've did this morning. And it took me 20 minutes to write three pages this morning.
Excellent. And do you feel a kind of mental relief and almost a letting go as you're writing?
It's interesting. I used to do morning page. I've done these several times in my life, and they do change. And sometimes they get very bitchy, whiny and moany. And I gave up morning pages, or certainly morning journaling, for a while, because it was always the same. It got too samey. And I think I've shifted in my head a bit over the last few years because I started these morning pages. And while there is a lot of bitching, whining and moaning, there's actually not that much. So I've obviously cleared a lot of the stuff out of the way of some sorts because it was quite expressive. And what I have noticed is that ideas pop on the page and things turn up. They go, oh, that's an interesting idea.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, a lot of psychological studies really attest to this, the power of writing. It's tremendous. And I think for anyone who's listening, it's a wonderful thing to explore. So,
and I think you also, there is an importance to three pages. And I know it sounds like, oh, it's a big deal. Yeah, all right. It is a bit of a big deal. But there's an importance to it. And let's put it this way. If you were to go and do exercise, you've got to warm up. You've got to warm up. So even when I run, I don't run out the door. I walk at least 500 meters. I walk briskly 500 meters as my warm up, and then I run.
Yes.
Yeah. So when you're writing any writing, you've got to clear the throat. You've got to clear. You've got to do this. You've got to do the warm up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, the first page of writing is warm up.
Yes.
And that's why you have to do three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes perfect sense, Paul. When you speak, there is an unmistakable passion these days. I know this hasn't always been the way. I know your sense of passion is something that's evolved and something that indeed right now is evolving. Can you tell us what you think the shift has been in you so that a man who was not quite so passionate became a man who is very passionate?
I wouldn't call myself very passionate. I think I'm driven, and I think there is a sense of passion. But it depends on what you mean by passion, because there's some level of rah 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 passion. You know, it's the Tony Robbins. It's the Tony Robbins passion. Let's get going. Come on,
you. That's not you. That's not you for sure. Yours is a more gentle.
Never ever be me.
Thank God. No, that's fine.
I guess part of the lack of passion, and you know, bless them, I'm not dissing them in any way. I had wonderful parents, but neither of my parents were great achievers in life. And neither of them knew how had the capacity to want to be. And I have to say, they are great achievers in something, in terms of both of them were war babies.
Right.
And both of them came out of violent families. Because violence was the way you were,
right?
Yeah, and so their achievement was not to transfer that violence onto me,
which is a major achievement.
It is. Yeah, my mother grew up. Her father had a razor strap on the back of the door, and if the misdemeanors and misdemeanors were slight, you had that razor strap across your back.
Wow.
And that was his form. And my father's side, his retribution was whatever the demeanor, it didn't matter who was doing it. He would pick up the two closest children and bash their heads together.
My God,
And it didn't matter who, even if he got the right person, the wrong person, what he would do, there were five kids in that family, and he would pick up the closest two kids and bash their heads together.
Wow, so that's shocking.
It is shocking, but it's the kind of way they were. I mean, that was parenting of the 1920s.
1930s. I guess so.
I know, and you know, so there is that mediocre thing. It's like from my parents, it was get a job. Doesn't matter what job you get, just get a job and stick with it. And when you come from that kind of driven thing, it's very hard to be passionate about anything, really, because it doesn't matter. You just do what you have to do.
It's a means to an end kind of thing.
And that was the classic thing, isn't it? It's that thing. They came out of the generation where you worked hard at whatever you did, and then one day you could retire and you could enjoy yourself.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And we're not in that generation anymore. So my passion has grown out of my realization that, actual fact, I can do exactly what I like. I can do whatever I want.
And how many years do you think that's evolved over? Was this one day to the next, or was this a very
I think actually it's moving to Scotland was the growth of it, really. Because when we came here, we were so passionate about moving here. It was so exciting. It's the most exciting thing I have ever done, packing a house up. and moving country. All right, on the same landscape, but it was the most exciting.
Wow. So do you think literally, physically taking yourself out of your comfort zone and placing yourself in an entirely different existence, do you think that could be the catalyst for people to find a passion?
Will you swim or sink?
That's for sure.
Yeah, I part of me, I would, it's not easy to do this. I would love to change country for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love the, I'm quite inspired by the fact that you lived in Barcelona.
And France,
you know, I and that's amazing to be able to do that and have those language skills. I'd love to just go, sod it, I'm going to go and move to Italy for a while. And at the moment there are logistical things that block me from doing that.
Like
family and I guess if at the moment it would be finance, because you know you'd have to finance it. So
of course.
Yeah, but if the desire was strong enough, and then it would be possible. And I guess if my wife had the same desire, then it would happen. But we don't have the same desire for that. And the choice is this is good enough. And the choice is let's travel a bit more, let's do other things. So my passion has grown out of, I guess, that realization that actually anything is possible if you know what it is. And that's the, I think, is the biggest challenge for me, particularly, is actually knowing what I want.
Yeah.
Because it took me years and years to realize that not choosing was a choice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I think it can take people years really to embrace their authenticity, to really get a grip on who they are, what they're about, what their strengths are, their values, their passions, and how they want to manifest that in the world and make a living from it, you know, in terms of vocation and the likes. So how authentically aligned do you feel now, Paul, to who you really are?
It's interesting, that one, because there are areas of my life where I guess the areas that are difficult to be authentic in, particularly in a business world, is areas of politics and those sort of views.
Yes, I
guess my politics are very much sort of center left, with a bit of right thrown in. So I'm kind of sit in the middle somewhere. And I guess my issue and the whole thing is that I don't actually think the two-party politics system works. I think we need more of a consensus politics, because I think there are some points in the world, all right, I'm getting on my soapbox, but I think there are some points in the world that actually work better from a right perspective, and there are some that work better from a left perspective. So there needs to be a fusion of the both. Having those kind of conversations in the world can be quite difficult. I'm also very much an environmentalist. One of the aspects of coming up to Scotland here around the Finhorn Foundation, there's a lot of very keen environmentalists up here, and I was very much involved in that. And I think that was one of the biggest issues that really knocked me out over the last 10 years or so. Because when I realized the shitstorm that's coming, I really kind of lost any faith in the potential of humanity to change.
Wow.
And there's still a shitstorm coming, and you know, you can see people trying to deny it. The IPCC report was out on Monday, and you know, they're in, it was the strongest worded report ever. And to me, it's a bit like going to the doctor and the doctor saying to you, you've got cancer, and you go, no, I don't believe you, we don't get cancer from smoking. It feels a bit like that at the moment. People are going, it's just a scientist, what do they know? And my sense of it is like, well, hang on a minute, look, you know, we're driving this earth as though there are three of them. We've only got one, and we're driving it as though there are three of them. And we're kind of going, well, we'll just see what happens, shall we? So I do get worried. That is an area for me that is really hard to be authentic with, because you can't have those conversations with some people, because people just don't want to have those conversations.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you with that. Paul, I have a couple more questions for you before we wrap up. Storytelling, telling stories. This seems something pretty important, pretty salient to you and to your life. Mm-hmm. What would you say is the story so far that has most shaped you or defined you? The story from your very own life.
A story for me?
Yeah. Which moment of your life do you think has most shaped or defined where you are today?
Okay, yeah. So, when I was in my 20s, I was very much, I worked in an environment, I was relatively quiet, I guess, in terms of my personality. I wasn't, didn't express myself overly. And I had few friends and certainly relationships were few and far between. So I clearly wasn't expressing something. There was something missing in terms of what I was putting out in the world. And I didn't know what that missing thing was. Mm-hmm. And then I was 27 and I went to I used to use the library, and it was a Saturday morning. I lived in the shared house. So we would clean the house again the Saturday morning. And then afterwards I would nip out to the library. So I went to the library and I saw this flyer for a theater piece, a play. Mm-hmm. And it was A Tale of Two Cities. And so I picked this up and thought, this is interesting. And I'd always had a kind of yearning or an interest in theatre, but not done much with it. Mm-hmm. And so I went to this audition and they were great. And they said, yeah, we'd love to work with you. It'd be great fun. It was an amateur production. So we put this play on anyway. And I got involved in set building and all sorts of stuff. And it was a really enjoyable thing working part of a team. Anyway, I was awful in the play, but I did recognize that there was something of interest here. So I looked around for some kind of acting training. And I found a summer course that was 2 weeks doing improvisational acting and that sort of stuff, storytelling. Anyway, I arrived on the Monday. I started crying on the Tuesday. And I did not finish crying until 2 weeks later.
Oh my goodness, what happened?
I basically got in touch with all the pain, hurt, and anger that I had suppressed all of my life. I literally opened the pressure vessel and I let 20 years of shit come out.
My God, that's powerful, isn't it?
And it was the most powerful thing I have ever done. And actually now I can feel, I'm actually connecting with the feelings of it now. I'm quite a little bit teary even talking about it. Now, I remember that was such an amazing process to do that. I know, talk about transference. I fell in love with the facilitator. I mean, it was literally that, you know, it was nothing that Terry could do anything. And it was so powerfully intense, but it got me into the acting world, and I use that place of creativity for probably 5 or 6 years after that.
Wow. Amazing.
And I learned to, and that was part of my seeing. So I learned to sing. I became, I have a tenor voice. I did quite a lot of productions singing, and I did a lot of acting and stuff. So yeah, it was a really fantastic time. And then when I was 29, I decided to go to drama school.
At 29, goodness, wow.
Yeah. So I never went, but the preparation for drama school was amazing. I did so much training and practice. And I auditioned for RADA and I auditioned for all of the big drama schools. And I got offered places in all these places, but I couldn't fund it. I needed like 15 grand a year to fund it. And I just couldn't find anywhere funding it.
Wow. But I don't think any of those skills have been lost or diluted in any way. For anybody who doesn't know Paul as well as I do, I have to say that he is one very creative individual. And that is a real pleasure to come into contact with and to work with, and very inspiring indeed. Paul, I have one final question for you today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about stories, one more time.
Mm-hmm.
In another 50 years' time or beyond, when you're not here anymore, what story is it that you would most like people to tell about you in the future?
Oh, this is the funeral story, isn't it? Well done. Nicely put.
What's your legacy, Paul? Tell us what your living legacy.
My living legacy. That's a really interesting one. And I don't necessarily need to be or want to be heavily remembered for anything, really. I just want to be known for someone that made a difference and lived lightly. I think that's the thing for me, really.
To live lightly, I love that. What does it mean to live lightly?
Well, not to cause too much damage on the way through, really. You know, not to cause too much damage on the earth and that sort of stuff, and to give back somehow, really. I guess that's probably what I want to leave behind. I don't have this great burning desire to be a change maker in the world. Well, no, that's wrong. I actually would quite like to be a change maker in the world, and I think that's what this podcast is about. But I don't have the burning desire to have my name over the plate. I'm quite happy to be the catalyst of the change maker. You know, that's probably why I'm I could sit in a podcast and be spouting this stuff on a podcast and be the lead person of the podcast, like a lot of them are. But that's not what I'm about. It's not my vehicle. It's my vehicle to explore other people's journeys. So I think I'm more of a facilitator of other people's greatness rather than the greatness of my own. And who knows? I don't know what that means. And maybe the story I will present, Jack Lisa, has not been written yet.
I love that. I love that. And let me say, you're doing the facilitation beautifully. You're really opening up and helping people to explore these more profound questions. And so I think, you know, you really are living out your purpose. And as you say, what is yet to come? Who knows?
Yeah, that's it really for me, actually. If I could get these questions more, if I could get people to focus on these questions in their life, you know, if I can get my son to recognize where his passions are, what success is for him before he enters the workspace. Mm-hmm. If I can get him to understand what for him the meaning of life is and how it changes throughout his life, if I can get those questions as part of actual normal life, then that will be a success for me. That will be a kind of thing for me.
That's powerful.
Because, you know, I think, you know, too many people sit around and watch bloody television and expect life to change.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, Paul, you're living proof that with the action, you know, changing your thinking, changing your behavior, changing your emotional state, you can make truly fabulous things happen. And I'm really excited to see where all of this goes for you, because I know it's definitely going in a very, very interesting
way. Well, I know it is, because you're part of the project. And
that's how I know. Absolutely. Well, listen,
Paul. Bit of self-interest there, maybe, darling.
Maybe. A little shameless plug there. Listen, Paul, it has been a true pleasure, a real privilege to get to turn the tables on you today and find out so much more about the man who usually does the questions.
I want to thank you for having a lovely journey, because I wasn't sure what to expect of that, and it has been a total pleasure to do this. And and it's interesting, because I was also picked up some time ago. Someone said podcasts shouldn't have the same questions every week. And I think they probably need to have the same structure, but I think you have opened up my eyes to the possibility of the podcast evolving somehow. I mean, it's a bit more work on the obviously the presenter's end, and I know you put quite a lot of work into putting this program together, so I want to thank you very much for that work you put into this.
An absolute pleasure, Paul, as ever. So thank you very much. Thank you for having me as a host.
Okay, thank you. And you need to sign this off, because I can't.
Thank you all so much for listening to episode 40 of Life, Passion and Business. It has been a real joy to share this journey with you today, and we will look forward to seeing you again, speaking to you again in the very near future. We do have some exciting projects unfolding, and we cannot wait little by little to reveal those to you. In the meantime, look after yourselves and
I have to say that was very enjoyable being interviewed on my own program. But of course, as the editor, I get to have the last word. So thank you for listening. And as always, all the details of this show and details of any other show are on the podcast website. So please like, subscribe, share and follow our journey, because there is so much more to come. I will catch you next week.